Chapter 10, Waldorf Education and the Future of Assessment for Learning. Our aim in undertaking the case studies reported in Part 2 was to help non-Waldorf educators understand Waldorf education by describing the actual student assessment methods of Waldorf class teachers teaching in real time in three independent Waldorf elementary schools. This account of their methods raises the question that we try to address in Part 3. Can we trust the teachers? Are Waldorf assessments, if we take the ones we documented as representative, valid, reliable, and fair in the absence of external measures? Do Waldorf teachers using these assessment strategies deliver the education promised in the outreach and mission statements of OSNA and its member schools? As the description in Chapter 2 of the Waldorf Understanding of the Purpose of Education makes clear, Waldorf teachers will always be concerned to make comprehensive assessments that go beyond traditional academic knowledge and skills to include aspects of unpredictable individual development that cannot be measured and evaluated by numbers, grades, percentiles, or other kinds of test results. Moreover, that these aspects are interwoven with academic skills is a given in Waldorf education. Therefore, the kind of proof of student attainment provided by norm-reinforced, standardized test scores is not used in Waldorf pedagogy. At the same time, we have stressed throughout that the Waldorf curriculum includes traditional subject matter. Waldorf schools set standards for student academic and cognitive learning, and Waldorf teachers set subject-specific objectives in every block. Therefore, while Waldorf schools decline to use them, standardized tests that measure, for example, math and English language skills could be used to confirm the validity of Waldorf assessments in these areas. Standardized testing has in fact been done in some public charter schools working with Waldorf methods, with results that we note below. But independent Waldorf elementary schools, for the most part, choose not to involve students and teachers with standardized tests. Independent Waldorf high schools, however, focus strongly on academic achievement and cognitive skills and include standardized test-taking skills in their curricula. We know of some Waldorf elementary schools that in some circumstances use outside testing at teachers' and parents' discretion for identifying learning disabilities. We show in Chapter 7 that the Waldorf approach to student assessment, methods and principles, is comparable to that which is advocated by some scholars at the forefront of the search for better learning outcomes. While we cannot confirm the extent to which these methods are being used in non-Waldorf schools, we can infer from this scholarly literature that at least some public school teachers are using curriculum-embedded classroom assessments, designing performance tasks, and requiring student portfolios, group projects, and other assignments as basis for assessments, along with preparing students for required standardized tests, for example, Kerwin and others, 2010. A review of Waldorf strategies that are shared with creative teachers elsewhere and a reminder of what is unique to Waldorf education are in order. First, however, we bring some additional considerations to the issues of accountability and trust in teachers. Accountability and teacher objectivity. We have established that in OSNA member Waldorf schools, there are structures and processes designed to ensure effective evaluation of teachers. Mentoring by senior teachers, peer evaluation, and continuous collaboration among teachers. In addition, accreditation of independent Waldorf schools by independent regional agencies always entails scrutiny of teacher competence. Waldorf education is based on trust in the diligence and commitment to the excellence of teachers, which includes trust in teachers' own efforts to be fair and objective. Our case studies presented teachers' subjective accounts, but these accounts revealed their conscientious efforts toward objectivity in their observations of behavior, performance, engagement, achievement, in short, in their continuing evaluation of progress toward benchmarks. Educators outside the Waldorf movement have recognized that teachers' reflections and intuitions can be reliable and critical for good outcomes. For example, Schoen, 1983. And argue that confidence in teacher professionalism and proactivity is reasonable. For example, Rallis, Rossman, Flagen, and Arbeel, 1995. Waldorf teachers assess their students repeatedly over weeks in a variety of situations. Learning is multisensory and multifaceted. Students learn the same content through listening, recall, writing, artistic renderings, speech, poetry and song, group work, tests, and quizzes. Assessment is never based on one piece of work. If a conscientious teacher judges that a student has met block expectations, then it is very likely that given the varied activities, this is a reliable assessment. And with regard to objectivity, when the goal is that the student does something, as is so often the case in Waldorf experiential pedagogy, memorize a poem, participate in a game, accurately answer quiz questions, then that he did is beyond dispute. When the teacher evaluates how well it is done, very well, passably well, needs more effort, and so on, he is drawing on professional training and experience to make that judgment. It is true, like any teacher, a Waldorf teacher may be influenced by purely subjective factors, like sympathy for a struggling student of whom she is fond. But the evidence on which she makes that subjective evaluation is objective, and there for anyone to see or hear. The main lesson book work, the student journal, the recitation of a poem, participation in a counting game, and in higher grades, the homework, quizzes, and tests. The whole school community, and even the public, have the opportunity to see and hear these performances and products. Other faculty, parents, and visitors attending open houses, assemblies and plays, and outside education professionals during accreditation visits. As Wiggins, 1990, points out, human judgment is a factor in all assessments, including standardized tests, in choosing questions and establishing norms, which are typically immune from public scrutiny and oversight, page 4. It is the credibility and integrity of those judges that counts. In the same way, it is the credibility and integrity of class teachers in Waldorf schools that counts, and their teaching enthusiasm, experience, and skill. Waldorf class teachers are concerned first and foremost not with what the student knows, but who the student is. Each student is an individual in a process of becoming. The Waldorf teacher would never pressure to know the final outcome. He views his tasks as sacred. He provides the guidance, the opportunities, the encouragement and inspiration, the exposure to the rich body of human experience in history, science, literature, and other fields of human endeavor that all students need and have the right to know about. The descriptions provided earlier of OSNA's path to membership, Waldorf teacher preparation, and individual school systems of teacher evaluation are part of the answer to the question, can we trust the teachers? As those descriptions show, teachers are held accountable by their colleagues to Waldorf teaching standards given explicit form by the faculties of schools that are in compliance with OSNA's shared principles. We showed that Waldorf teacher evaluation systems in particular are consistent with the best such systems in public education. We suggest that it is unlikely in any school, public or private, that these or similar structures and processes in place will fail to identify unwarranted teacher subjectivity or poor teaching. But the final judgment rests with students and parents. The most reliable indicator for accountability is the approval of parents who would not continue to send their children to Waldorf schools and paying tuition in addition to their local education taxes to support public schools if teachers were not delivering the promised education. Accountability. Other indicators. In our experience, it is part of the culture of Waldorf schools to encourage parents to be involved and to work closely with teachers. Waldorf classrooms are open to visits from parents and other family members at most times, and Waldorf schools schedule open house events several times a year for visitors from outside the school community. Class teachers send parents a full description of the learning expectations for the year, along with students' end-of-year narrative reports to provide parents with a context for understanding their child's development. Parental involvement and oversight, OSNA's rigorous requirements for continuing membership, and the initial teacher education and ongoing professional development of Waldorf class teachers and OSNA-approved systems of teacher evaluation in place in the schools, these are the building blocks of accountability in Waldorf education. Critics who need further evidence that Waldorf schools deliver the promised results may find the following general trends relevant. Growth in the number of schools. The number of independent Waldorf elementary schools has doubled in the last 15 years. Waldorf schools are founded when parents in a community commit to establishing a school, frequently making financial sacrifices in the process. Typically, a Waldorf kindergarten is first established and grades are later added. Many recently established schools do not yet offer all 8 grades. According to OSNA, growth in the number of schools is constrained only by 2 factors, inadequate number of trained Waldorf teachers an absence of funding mechanisms that would make the schools financially accessible to all families interested in this approach to education. Continuing accreditation of full, grades 1 through 8, Waldorf elementary schools by independent outside agencies. For example, the New England Association of Schools and Colleges and the Association of Independent Schools of New England. Anecdotal evidence of the relative infrequency of withdrawals owing to parent dissatisfaction or a school's inability to meet a child's needs. Most Waldorf schools today have reading specialists and other teachers on staff available for tutoring students with learning disabilities and can now meet the special needs of children who, prior to this development, may have had to transfer to public schools for needed services. Ease of transfer to other schools. One important measure of the success of elementary education must be how well it prepares students for high school. The majority of Waldorf elementary school graduates do not have the option of continuing in a Waldorf high school because there are only 40 Waldorf high schools in the United States and Canada, and they transfer without difficulty into the public or independent secondary schools serving their areas. Test scores, college acceptances, and the record of achievement of graduates of Waldorf high schools. These indicators are less relevant here, because not all Waldorf High School students have also attended Waldorf Elementary Schools. But one study conducted by Waldorf educators suggests the success of Waldorf pedagogy at the high school level in showing that a high proportion of Waldorf High School graduates attend college, including colleges considered prestigious, and report satisfaction with their careers. Baldwin, Gerwin, and Mitchell, 2005. See waldorffreeresearchinstitute.org. And Mitchell and Gerwin, 2007, for more recent data on college acceptances. Testimonials from the general public about the success of Waldorf education generally, not just elementary level, are numerous. For example, Oppenheimer, 1999. See also from Waldorf educators the chapter on results in Mayer and Shepherd, 1995. We grant that students' ease of transfer to non-Waldorf schools and continuing success in those schools may be attributed to not only their Waldorf preparation, but also they're having parents who are well-educated or have strong interest in educational issues as evidenced in having chosen an independent school. It is also tempting to attribute later school success to their coming from high or middle-income families since, like all independent schools, Waldorf schools must charge tuition. This latter linkage does not hold up, however. A hefty percentage of students enrolled in the three schools in our study were receiving financial aid. According to OSNA, percentages ranging from one-third to one-half are typical for its member schools. Shared hallmarks of Waldorf Learning-Centered Assessment. The Waldorf approach to student assessment is comparable in many respects to alternative assessment methods explored and endorsed by many education scholars. The following are the hallmarks of that approach. In the future, if professional educators prevail over public policymakers, these strategies may be found increasingly in use in public and non-Waldorf independent schools. 1. Assessment is for the purpose of supporting further learning. Waldorf teachers construe the purpose of student assessment as pedagogical, to enhance immediate learning and motivate and inspire further learning. Both the process and the products of assessment are meant to be learning opportunities, especially in the realm of self-knowledge. For this reason, teachers often use group and peer assessment and in higher grades encourage students to self-assess. 2. Assessments are comprehensive. Reflecting the primacy of the life goal, which is a holistic goal for the development over time of the capabilities and creative potential for every individual student, Waldorf assessments are comprehensive in all areas of development, which educators understand as the three domains of cognitive, affective, and psychomotor development. Waldorf teachers' assessments focus on the development of healthy emotional life, character and temperament, self-knowledge, aesthetic sensibilities, creative, initiative and responsibility, higher-order thinking capabilities, dispositions, social skills and physical health, as well as subject content mastery and analytical thinking. 3. Assessments are multidimensional. Comprehensive assessment of development in all domains is accomplished through gathering of many pieces of evidence. Evidence may include written and artistic work, performance tasks, oral participation, homework, quizzes, tests, group projects, and observation of behavior in multiple social and learning situations. 4. Performance assessments are prominent. Experiential learning opportunities that lend themselves to performance assessments evaluating students engaged in doing some project or activity, as well as any tangible results of such activity, figure prominently in the Waldorf teacher's repertoire of assessment practices. 5. Assessments are curriculum-embedded classroom assessments based on day-to-day classroom instruction. Waldorf teachers construe assessment and teaching as unified, not as two separate tasks. In Waldorf schools, assessment is done only by teachers who know the individual students well and who take into account expectations that are tailored to individual potential. Assessment is an aspect of the teacher-student relationship, and as such has continuity with the daily life of the classroom. End-of-block and end-of-year formal reports that are written outside of class are considered extensions of classroom assessments. They are descriptive of and based entirely on classroom learning. While one or more of these 5 assignment strategies may be found in many non-Waldorf settings, Waldorf practice is distinct in its use of the developmental benchmarks described in Chapter 2 and elsewhere that determine what is assessed, when, and how. To recapitulate, the assessing attention of teachers of lower grades, typically grades 1 through 4, is directed mainly at activating students' imagination, their feeling engagement in activities, and the enthusiasm of their participation. Teachers of these grades focus on children's physical well-being, the development of both large and fine motor skills, and social adjustment. Teachers refrain from grading or comments that would make children self-conscious and undermine their joy in learning. Instead of tests, they observe children engaged in games and activities through which learning and assessment of learning take place simultaneously. With regard to what non-Waldorf educators usually mean by academic skills, the emphasis here is on readiness or progress in development of faculties that are essential for later work in the cognitive domain. Starting in 5th or 6th grade, teachers require increasing amounts of homework and give increasingly frequent written tests or end-of-block challenges to demonstrate learning. They begin to set specific expectations in all areas, including academic skills with comments, rating scales, and in some cases letter grades, given on assignments and in-class tests, and noted on end-of-year narrative reports. In these ways, the Waldorf conception and practice of age appropriateness is different from what non-Waldorf educators mean by the phrase at grade level. The Waldorf age-appropriate delivery of curriculum is the exception in the above summary of shared hallmarks, all of which we presume have advocates and practitioners in non-Waldorf settings. Osna's position on public charter schools. The nationwide charter school movement includes a number of public schools that are working toward integrating aspects of Waldorf pedagogy into their curricula. These schools presumably aim to practice the age-appropriate assessment for learning approach to student assessment just discussed. Osna holds the rights to the use of the service marks Waldorf, Waldorf Inspired, Steiner, and Rudolf Steiner. While some public charters use these terms in their names and in their public outreach, these schools are not subject to the rigorous path to membership that Osna requires of applicant independent schools, nor is Osna involved in their establishment or ongoing evaluation. The Alliance for Public Waldorf Education, www.allianceforpublicwaldorfeducation.org, has identified 38 schools, of which 18 are in California. Some of the practicing teachers of these public charters have teaching credentials from OSNA member teacher training institutes or have experience teaching in OSNA member schools. Therefore, we cannot say that their student assessment methods conform to those that we have been describing. Regulations and requirements handed them by their school districts, which might result in deviations from Waldorf practice, would vary from charter to charter. The inevitability of such accommodations is the main reason for OSNA's concern that their use of such terms, such as Waldorf-inspired, can be misleading. Waldorf educators working within OSNA appreciate the intentions and efforts of such schools, foremost of which is to offer some of the features of Waldorf education to families who otherwise could not afford it or who live in areas with no independent Waldorf school within reasonable distance. Nonetheless, OSNA stands by its mission to protect the integrity of Waldorf education and to ensure that Waldorf schools are adhering to the shared principles. See Chapter 8. Despite their good intentions, charter schools may be undermining that integrity in at least 3 ways. First, as said above, OSNA sets and safeguards rigorous standards for Waldorf teacher education, peer evaluations, teacher mentoring, school administration policies, school accreditation, and many other matters. Public charter schools have their own requirements, set by whatever government agency has authorized their charter. Because these schools often advertise themselves as Waldorf schools without qualifiers, as in phrases like public Waldorf classrooms and tuition-free Waldorf education, the general public tends to conflate them with independent Waldorf education. This leads to misunderstanding of Waldorf methods and principles. Second, in some locations, the proximity of a charter school to an OZA member independent Waldorf school has an adverse enrollment and financial impact on the latter. Independent Waldorf schools, in fact, all independent schools, without exception, have financial aid programs and keep their tuitions as low as possible, but cannot compete with a tuition-free charter school. Third, OZNA has been active for several years in researching and advocating for alternative funding mechanisms such as tuition tax credits, generous scholarship plans, and innovative tuition models that can help establish real freedom of school choice for all families. The easy solution of public charter schools tends to dilute these efforts, making the adoption of creative alternative funding seem unnecessary. School independence is a defining condition. The principle of school independence is the first of the shared principles that a school commits to when undertaking the path to OZNA membership. What is at stake in school independence is not only the freedom of educators to determine how and what to teach, but much-needed progress toward healing all aspects of social life, according to the threefold social theory of Rudolf Steiner. In order to bring about a healthy social life, we must make progress toward actualizing the principles of freedom, equality, and brotherhood, each in its own sphere of activity. Freedom in cultural life, which includes education, equality in the sphere of politics and rights, and goodwill or interdependence in a sustainable economy, best effected through associative activity of producers, middlemen, and consumers. Independence of schooling from the influence of politics and business is the linchpin of this view. Charter schools exist by means of public funding, which is taxpayers' money managed by government at federal, state, and local levels. At the outset, proponents of charter schools intended them to be free from government control, a laudable condition from the Waldorf perspective. Public funding is not, in theory, incompatible with school independence. In practice, however, public funding of charter schools in most states comes with an increasing level of government interference in the form of regulations and requirements, including requirements for standardized testing, OZNA 2007. Some public charters working to follow a Waldorf curriculum have, in fact, been subjected to enough standardized testing to enable statistical analysis of test scores, Larison, Daly, and Van Voren, 2012. This analysis shows that the reading scores of their students were below those of students in the control schools up to fourth grade, and thereafter were well ahead. Math scores showed a similar pattern. Scores of students in charters working with the Waldorf curriculum were below those of students in control schools, but by sixth grade were ahead and remained ahead. In addition to reporting these results, the authors of this article consider the possible negative effects of standardized testing on any schools with a more holistic approach to education. Not only do such schools risk state interventions, but their reputation is impacted by rating scales based on test results, because some parents still tend to judge school quality on the basis of test scores, page 15. We cite this view as support for OZNA's concern about government interference in public charters that are attempting to follow the Waldorf curriculum. In Steiner's social theory, in a healthy society, the scope of government activity in education would be limited to ensuring educated-related rights of families and children. As succinctly stated in the position paper of the Research Institute for Waldorf Education, the task of government is not to guarantee equal schooling for everyone. Rather, it is to guarantee equal access to the kinds of education that parents believe right for their children. Mitchell and others, 2008, page 5. Mitchell and others, 2008, page 11. What should not be within the power of government to influence, dictate, or control are teaching and assessment methods, the setting of standards for teaching and student learning, and matters of curriculum. OZNA, 2007, page 7. From the Waldorf perspective, a government-issued requirement for assessment with standardized testing violates the principle of school independence and human dignity. It is an unacceptable and unnecessary interference in teaching, which is a vocation with its own stringent requirements for preparation and practice. Waldorf educators maintain that well-trained teachers are competent to make valid assessments of those abilities evaluated by standardized tests. Public Education and School Independence in Finland. In Sahlberg's 2007-2011 Accounts of Public Education in Finland, we find a striking example of a public education system that does not entail government regulation, but that grants full autonomy to local schools, teachers, and administrators in all matters of pedagogy, curricula, standards, and assessments. The Finnish system is based on evaluation of and trust in the professionalism of teachers, with excellent outcomes. In studies that compare Finnish students' academic abilities with their peers from other countries, the Finns do as well or better. Public education in Finland is characterized by decentralized management of schooling that gives responsibility to teachers and individual schools. In this system, the only but important role of the government is to ensure the autonomy of local schools. The education authorities and political leaders assume that teachers, like other professionals, doctors and lawyers, for example, are responsible for outcomes. Teachers, principals, parents, and local communities are trusted to do the job. In these public schools, teachers' students' assessments are descriptive. No grades are given, and the only standardized test comes at the end of secondary school as part of the process of application to college. According to Sahlberg, 2007, the Finns' understanding of the purpose of education is comparable to that of Waldorf education. Schooling should aim for the holistic development of personality, including knowledge, skills, values, creativity, and interpersonal characteristics. With a focus on individual development, not universal one-size-for-all standards, and on long-term outcomes rather than short-term goals, page 166. What makes a good teacher? There is, currently, a consensus of all sectors involved in teacher reform, public policy, academia, education foundations, the teaching profession, that good teachers are the critical factor for improving educational outcomes. For example, Gates Foundation, 2010, Measures of Effective Teaching, ND, Minnesota Public Radio, 2010, New York Times, 2011, Obama, 2010. The challenge is to understand what the characteristics of a good teacher are and to identify conditions that can support good teaching. In Part 2, we reported what we believe were lively, effective teaching and assessment methods that resulted in valid, reliable, and fair evaluations of student progress. As a contribution to discussion of this critical issue, we offer the following list of the characteristics and conditions that we recorded and have observed to exist in the Waldorf elementary schools we have personally known. The teachers were dedicated to their profession. They were well-educated, conscientious, creative, and self-reflective. They shared with colleagues, families, and their communities a common view of the long-term desired outcome of education. They participated in rigorous systems of peer evaluation in their schools, with regular reviews aimed at improving their teaching and with follow-up upgrading of professional skills in summer courses and workshops. They respected and genuinely cared about their students and were at all times concerned to uphold and encourage students' self-esteem, self-confidence, and individual potential. Their schools were self-governing, independent of government interference in matters of standards, curriculum, and assessment. The teachers themselves had autonomy and shared responsibility with their colleagues for the making of all pedagogical decisions. To the best of their abilities, they delivered an age-appropriate, content-rich curriculum that covered the full range of human endeavor: the arts, practical skills, science and math, the humanities, social skills, character development, community building, and physical and emotional health. They used a wide repertoire of assessment strategies to comprehensively monitor their students' growing competence in all areas of development, including writing assignments, artistic activities, movement and games, practical applications, recitations, group projects, and a variety of experiential learning activities. They had freedom to create and carry out classroom activities that they judged to be appropriate and effective for the individuals in the class and the class as a social group. They were free from the pressures and constraints of external and standardized testing. We add this qualification to the last point. While they enjoy considerable freedom to create lively presentations that can meet the needs of the children and promote progress toward learning goals, no teacher in an independent Waldorf school would be allowed to simply do as she pleases. Waldorf pedagogy sets parameters. the developmental and content-rich curriculum, time-tested pedagogical methods, the school's faculty-mandated standards, parental oversight, and the supportive collegial matrix of the school and Waldorf movement. These elements converge to focus, guide, and inspire the individual teacher's efforts. Limitations and suggested further research. In the course of accounting for Waldorf schools' methods of assessment, we have provided an account of Waldorf pedagogy, more or less in its entirety. This is because Waldorf education is a whole whose parts are closely interwoven. Its foundational view of the developing child, its principles, its curriculum, its standards for teaching, and its freedom from government regulation are all integral to its approach to making student assessments. But much has been omitted. While we believe that the teachers in the study are representative of experienced Waldorf teachers in OSNA member schools, our account, which is limited to the teaching of selected core subjects, provides a narrow view that does not capture the full range of students' daily experience in Waldorf schools. We have omitted, for example, a description of the aesthetics of the classroom, the full day's activities, and what non-Waldorf educators might call extracurricular activities, which are not extras in the Waldorf school, but essentials. For example, world languages, school assemblies when classes share their work with each other and with parents, celebration of festivals from many cultures, handwork, woodwork, and other practical arts, drama through annual class plays, singing and orchestra, field trips. At the same time, our account suggests several areas for further research that might make a helpful contribution to the search by academics and public policymakers for better learning outcomes, such as Waldorf methods in early childhood programs, kindergarten in grades 1 and 2. Many descriptions are available in Waldorf literature of how Waldorf teachers of young children build the foundations for learning in later grades. A study that focused specifically on assessment strategies in the early childhood years, using mainstream terms and an educational framework accessible to an audience of education professionals working in the early childhood field, is called for. Computers in the classroom. The Waldorf position and experience, briefly discussed in Chapter 7, has a potentially important role in determining the future of computers in elementary-level classrooms. Waldorf computer-free elementary-level classrooms could serve as a control group in further research on the benefits or negative effects of computer-based instruction at specific grade levels or over the developmental arc of the child's educational career. Integration of artistic activities in the academic curriculum. In most non-Waldorf schools that retain an arts curriculum, arts is a separate subject. Waldorf teachers know how to integrate drawing, illustrating, modeling, music, drama, and creative writing into every academic subject. Research focused on these methods, their rationale, and results could be useful to educators who advocate for the arts. Assessment of emotional intelligence. A study of the criteria by which Waldorf teachers evaluate students' emotional and social maturity might be welcome, given the growing interest in this area of learning on the part of scholars working in education and psychology. Conclusion. In calling for a shift to assessment for learning, Shepherd, 2000, says it will be a daunting task to implement her social constructivist paradigm. She calls for new research embedded in the dilemmas of practice and studies in classrooms where instruction and assessment strategies are consonant with this model. Page 12. Black and others, 2004, also note the need for living examples and reports of successful implementation of assessment for learning in classrooms. Page 13. We think the case studies reported in Part 2 meet this need and provide living examples. Our work here may help strengthen the position of those who argue that standardized testing is neither necessary nor helpful in furthering good educational outcomes, and who propose that comprehensive teacher-created classroom assessments are sufficient and reliable for evaluating learning, teaching, and schools. It supports those who recognize that motivation is the key to learning and who understand the critical importance of the social dynamics of the classroom and the teacher-student relationship. In Waldorf education, we see models of elementary schools that are autonomous, independent of top-down controls and externally imposed standards, and that deliver an education whose quality can be judged by anyone willing to engage firsthand in objective study of their classrooms. Whatever the judgment, the striking convergence of Waldorf methods with those recommended by eminent scholars in education and other fields argues for the inclusion of the Waldorf perspective in today's education discourse. The current disjunction between, on one hand, education professionals arguing for more teacher autonomy and curriculum-embedded individualized assessment and, on the other, public policymakers insisting on efficient, highly centralized planning and control has deep roots in education theory and practice in the United States. Assessment for the purpose of furthering learning is not a new idea. What is new over the past two decades is the ever-increasing reliance in public policy on mandated, standardized, norm-reference testing for measuring student learning and holding schools and teachers accountable. Waldorf education, its fundamentals, methods, and results may help expand the terms of the debate on education reform and provoke new questions. Who is in the best position to decide matters of standards and curriculum? What kinds of assessments can lead to better results, and what results exactly do we want? Can we envision assessment being in the hands of highly trained teachers in the classroom as in Finland? What is the proper role of the government in education? How might schools be held accountable to their constituents if the government withdrew its mandates? What if taxes for education were returned to parents for making their choice of the school they deem best for their children? Should we pay more attention to the stages of child development and make adjustments in curriculum and assessment, for example, with less emphasis on cognitive skills in the early grades? What vision of human potential should education serve to realize, or, in other words, what truly is the goal of education, one that is worthy of our efforts at education reform? If Waldorf education is to contribute to these discussions, it first needs to be understood. We hope this account of the Waldorf approach to student assessment helps make greater understanding possible. Assessment for Learning in Waldorf Classrooms is available in print through Academia Press at www.academiapress.com. ISBN number 978-1-68053-000-1.